Coming up on Golf Today, easy as 1, 2, 3. FedEx Cup leaders Scotty, Victor, and Rory meet the media at Eastlake as they try to fight their way to a season-long title, and you will hear from them. And from the short game to the big time, Alexa Pano notches LPGA win number 1 and birthday number 19. Will visit with a potential star and Patriots fan. Plus, Nick Dunlap was the last man standing at the U.S. Amateur. Despite a rocky start in the Rocky Mountain State, he joined Tiger in the history books. He joins us next on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
Eastlake Golf Club in Atlanta, Georgia, the site of the FedEx Cup finale. You can catch live first-round coverage of the season-ending Tour Championship featuring the top 30 and the FedEx Cup. That starts tomorrow at 1 Eastern time right here on Golf Channel. And here is the field and the starting stroke. Scottie Scheffler, once again, reprising his role in the driver's seat. He'll begin at 10 under par. Victor Hovland, couple back at 8 under after winning the BMW Championship. Rory McIlroy, third at 7 under. John Rahm, you see, four back at 6 under as we go on down the list. It culminates with 26 through 30 at even. They will begin the week 10 behind Scottie Scheffler, which is a big order, to say the least. Hey there, welcome into this two-hour edition of Golf Today. I'm George Savarikas, pleased to be sitting alongside Damon Hack. Always fascinating this time of year to look at the template for the Tour Championship, how that has shifted over time, and curious mentally, and this was posed on Twitter as a question, what if they flipped the format to have even be where the leader is and all the chasers at plus 10, psychologically, how that would change things for guys? But it's such an atypical week where guys start on Thursday trailing, Damon.
If guys started at plus 10, I think it would be a mess. I don't think the PGA Tour would do that to those players. Scotty, by the way, is the first player to enter the Tour Championship with the lead 2 years in a row. The first player ever to do it said last year, little mental errors got in the way. But it's a unique thing for a player to be sleeping on a lead for essentially a week as opposed to a night or two.
Yeah, it certainly is. And you wonder the guys who are, say, 5, 6, 8 back, how you try and make incremental gains as it's the beginning of the tournament. Normally, you assess where your game is through a couple days, and then maybe on a weekend, if you're 5 back, okay, Saturday's moving day. Now Thursday's moving day.
Yeah, and those guys that are 4 or 5 shots back, I feel like, hey, I got nothing to lose. Freewheel it a little bit, you know. I mean, aim at some flags, but, you know, I'm kind of a traditionalist, I would say. It's a little awkward to be sitting on a Wednesday talking about someone with a 2-shot lead already, but I do think it adds a unique element to this tournament. It's the one time a year that we see it. I think it's a unique pressure, especially for the players that are on the top of the leaderboard, and a chance for the guys down at the bottom to maybe make a move and go out and shoot a low number on Thursday.
I think it's easier for the fan to follow at home compared to what was the previous format. I would love to see a Wednesday to Saturday tournament and then take, say, like the top 6 in a one-day shootout.
Match play or stroke play?
Stroke play.
Okay.
Just whoever goes low, that would be the PGA Tour Super Bowl Sunday. But I get, from a TV standpoint, it's hard to have a smaller field than, say, 30 in that broadcast window just because if one guy runs away with it, it crushes the drama versus the format we have here. It generally delivers on Sunday.
And I think this season has delivered. We've had a lot of great winners, some unexpected storylines, and I think it'll culminate in a great week in Atlanta this week.
And someone who has certainly delivered in the FedEx Cup playoffs historically, a 3-time champ, that would be Rory McIlroy. Remember what he did in 2016, won 2 FedEx Cup playoffs events, took the 2016 Tour Championship in a playoff to win his first FedEx Cup crown. Then you go to 2019. What a year that was. Rory McIlroy had 3 wins in 2019. 4 wins if you open it up for the calendar year, including the Tour Championship. It was the second time he's hoisting the hardware for the FedEx Cup. And then last year in 2022, able to chase down the aforementioned Scottie Scheffler and win the FedEx Cup for the 3rd time in his career. Let's take a look at his season so far.
I think it's been strong to quite strong. Couple of wins, couple of runner-up finishes as well. 12 top 10 finishes and 17 starts. High level of consistency, in my opinion. Let's hear from the world number 2.
I think last year, in fact, I was probably energized by everything that was going on in the world of golf. I felt like we were maybe in a bit more of a state of flux. I sat up here at this table this day last year talking about designated events and getting all the best players to play together and all that stuff. And I feel like everything's a little more settled. So I feel I've been, you know, I remember this time last year being on a board call at 7:30 in the morning on the Tuesday, trying to get all that stuff ratified and get it passed through the board. And, you know, I've been able to focus a little bit more just on golf and my game, and even able to take 2 days at home between Chicago and here, getting to spend some time with the girls. You know, that's been really nice. So, I'd say everything's just a little more balanced and, you know, a little more calm this year.
Just going to go right up here, standing up.
Hey, Rory. We saw you out there yesterday on the putting green. Looked like maybe you'd gone back to the spider putter. Do you know what you're going to have in the bag for the putter this week?
Yeah. More than likely, I'll probably go back to the spider. I figured a couple things out last week. Just with, like, aiming and some of the shorter putts. And, you know, there's a lot of putts last week that had a lot of break on them and from short distances. And I fell with a shorter line on the putter. I just couldn't trust my aim as much as when I have the spider and have that slightly longer line. So, yeah, practiced with it a good bit yesterday, and it's a familiar feel. I've done really well with that putter over the last few years, and I've had some of my best putting weeks in my career at this golf course on these greens with that putter. So, hopefully I can rekindle that again this week.
Okay, let's go to Dylan right here.
You mentioned this year seeming a little bit more calm around now, but I guess from out here it seems like things still really are in a state of flux. Do you think you're just a little bit less involved or less emotionally involved, or do you have a better sense of where this thing is all going this fall than maybe we do?
Yeah, maybe less emotionally involved. I think last year it was to do with how can we make the product of the PGA Tour better, and I think I was really invested in that. So when it comes to like governance and investment and all, like that doesn't really, not that I don't care about it, but it doesn't excite me as much as making the product better and how can we make this the most competitive landscape to play professional golf, and how can we get all the best players to play together. Like, that's the stuff that excites me. The stuff that's going on right now, look, I'm on the board and I have to be involved, and whenever something's brought to the table, I'll vote on it, yes or no. And maybe just not as emotionally engaged on all of this other stuff.
Just looking ahead to the Ryder Cup, just out of curiosity, do you have a problem with the Americans being able to select live guys in Europe's not, or it is what it is?
What guys?
For the Ryder. The Ryder Cup being able to take guys from live. The Americans taking live guys in Europe not. No?
I don't think it would make a difference for us.
Rory, two quick things. Is it too early to say if Tiger's had much influence on the policy board? I mean, it was just announced a month ago or so, and secondly, is it your understanding that if and when the framework agreement gets to the finish line, that all of the player directors have to be unanimous?
I don't think all the player directors have to be unanimous. I don't think it has to be a unanimous vote. It just has to be a majority. And I think Tiger being on the board, it's meaningful that he's on it, that he's engaged, that he's certainly been spending more time on it than I have. He's been talking to some people and he's been talking to a lot of people. And he's really engaged in just trying to get the best outcome for the players on the PGA Tour. So I think his difference has been felt already. And I think it'll only continue to, his presence on there will only continue to grow as we head towards that December 31st deadline.
Rory McIlroy covering a lot of ground as he is wont to do. Let's welcome in the third member of our team, Paige McKenzie. Paige, what's your takeaway from Rory McIlroy, especially when it comes to the flat stick?
Yeah, there was a lot to unpack in that conversation that he had with the media, but I'm looking more at what he was talking about in the form, and he is specifically asked a lot of questions about his putting this year, and there's good reason, because when you look at, based on what he's done last year and what he's done this year on the putting green, you see a noticeable decline. You can see his strokes gain putting last season, gaining nearly half a shot on the median of the field, and this year there is that decline. But what I want you to also pay attention to is every other category. If you look, this is a player that was leading the PGA Tour in strokes gained total last season. He has improved in every single category with the exception of putting, and has a strokes gained total greater than that of last season, where, again, he was leading the PGA Tour. He is not this year. Scottie Scheffler is, and he had a tremendous season. But when you look at Rory McIlroy, he's answered those questions about the putting statistics this season. But it's worth noting that the rest of his game has managed to pick up, and he's coming into this week with incredible form, not only 9 consecutive top 10s coming into this, but he's got 28 consecutive rounds of par or better, the longest current active streak on the PGA Tour, coming back to a place, as he said, at least he's comfortable on those putting greens.
Yeah, looking for a little heat with the putter in a place where he's had some of his best putting weeks. I tell you what, I think he's among the leaders in strokes gained peace of mind right now. Just listening to him talk about the couple days off with the family. He looks tan, rested, and ready. I think that was a great question from Dylan DeChair of golf.com. Is he just a little more removed from some of the uncertainty around professional golf? And I think the answer to that question is yes. He has removed himself to a certain extent,
well,
at
mentally,
least emotionally,
yeah,
from all of the uncertainty.
Because, yeah, I think emotionally he's tried to disengage a bit and focus more on Rory. But then he's still on the board. He's still part of all these meetings.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's wearing it on his sleeve like he was, being kind of the guy carrying the mantle for the PGA Tour with all the outwardly facing rhetoric as the player who each and every week had to do press conferences regarding the LIV situation. Now he can take a little bit more of a back seat. And I think it's a fair tone to take with Tiger now injured, not playing, but way more engaged.
Mm-hmm.
Have Tiger carry a lot of that now for the players,
yeah,
as far as being dialed into all those conversations, pushing forward what the players are looking for. I thought that was great to hear that Tiger's already making an impact, and it seems to be one that's tangible and meaningful, and he's going to be the one to help try and push it towards the finish line on the players' behalf leading up to December 31st.
Still a lot for Rory to play for, even outside the major championships. He has 24 career PGA Tour wins. His next win, he's going to tie Johnny Miller, McDonald Smith, and Tommy Armour on the all-time list. He's T26 now all-time. He'd be T23 now. He's going for an unprecedented fourth FedEx Cup title. He's already the only guy with three. He looks like a guy who knows he's playing some great golf right now as well. And Paige mentioned the 9 straight top 10 finishes. He's, you know, the runner-up finish in L.A. at the U.S. Open. He won the Scottish with two of the best shots that we saw on the 71st and 72nd holes. To me, he looks like a dangerous player this week. He's not carrying the lead. He's going to be among the chasers. He made up that big deficit last year, touchdown deficit. It's a shorter road for him this year.
You give me all those stats, and you break it all the way down. What's a fair way to rate an average season for Rory McIlroy?
An average season for him?
Say, like, what's an expected season for Rory McIlroy?
I think a win a season is expected. He's has two this season. I think it's a very good year. I think because of his talent level, we expect a little bit more from the four-time major champ. But when you want to talk about consistency and the numbers, and Paige talked about it, but this is someone this year, second in strokes gained total and second in strokes gained off the tee. He's third in strokes gained approach. He's 75th in strokes gained putting, which is why he's been tinkering with that part of his arsenal. But Paige, I think this is someone who, when he, you know, puts his head on the pillow, is going to believe he's had a very, very good year without winning a major championship.
Yeah, and I actually, as I was evaluating, kind of looking back on this season, you could go back to Augusta and then the following withdrawal, and you wonder, you know, where was he mentally to get to this point now where he looks so confident, so composed, so at ease, all of those things that you said. And you think about the roller coaster that did occur earlier in the season, and now it's this incredible high-level play. So I think you add the physical talent, the physical statistics of what he's done, and you add add that to the mental strength, confidence, and peace that goes along with it. And I agree. I'm going to talk a little bit later in the show about some of the folks that had success here, and obviously he's one of the top of the list.
And I would say you look since June 6th, and you can even go a little before that, because Rory had kind of an inkling in the weeks leading up to it that, hey, there might be something down the pipeline. It seemed like a weight was freed almost when the news came out that the PGA Tour and Public Investment Fund were in talks, because since then, he hasn't finished outside the top 10 in any event on the PGA Tour. It's been one of the best stretches of consistency that we've seen from Rory in the last, say, 12 months.
Since that PGA Championship, no finish outside of the top 9. And I tell you what, when he was talking to Todd Lewis in Charlotte, which was his first PGA Tour start, I want to say after the Masters, he looked worn out.
Yeah.
And, you know, always accommodated, but being in front of a microphone and camera looked like the last place that Rory McIlroy wanted to be. He looked exhausted. He looked over it. He looks refreshed right now.
And how, I guess, smart was that break on Rory's end?
Yeah.
Where we were questioning, oh, he skips a designated event, RBC Heritage, where he needed time off after missing the cut at the Masters. Like, what's going on? Why is he stepping away from the game for a few weeks? Since then, it's been the peak, like Rory McIlroy 2.0 almost, from the summer run to get to this point now where he has a chance of trying to win the FedEx Cup for the fourth time.
One of his favorite golf courses in creation. Look out for him this week.
You could certainly say that. All right. When Golf Today continues, it was a big weekend for Alexa Panos, celebrated a birthday in style, grabbing her first LPGA Tour win. What's next for the newly minted winner? You're going to find out.
Back on Golf Today, it's flashback to 2016 when Alexa Pano won the 10-11 girls division in the Drive, Chip, and Putt National Finals. There she is with Adam Scott. A year later, she would become the first three-time finalist in Drive, Chip, and Putt history. And then on Sunday on the LPGA Tour and the ISPS Hand of World Invitational, Alexa celebrated her 19th birthday by grabbing her first LPGA Tour win in a playoff over Gabriella Cowley. And Pano made a birdie on the third playoff hole, had to scramble like crazy just to get there. And she'll be the third rookie to win on tour this year.
Yeah, let's take a look at her bio. You mentioned the victory. That was Sunday on her 19th birthday. Climbed all the way to 169th in the Rolex ranking. She's 38th now in the race to the CME Globe. First three-time Drive, Chip, and Putt national finalist. And we always mention it. She was featured in The Short Game, the 2012 documentary about junior golf. And now we have Alexa hopping on the show with us here on Golf Today. Alexa, when you hear LPGA Tour winner, now what comes to mind?
Yeah, it's super exciting, but definitely still feels a little weird and surreal. And I don't know if it's fully sunk in yet. Like, I understand it's happened, but still kind of shocking.
Alexa, from what I understand, you had been talking for months about winning on your birthday. I don't know if you have like a crystal ball or something, but tell us about that experience, as it were.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of a joke, but I just kept telling everyone that I was going to win in Ireland for many reasons, but like specifically that it was on my birthday. And I mean, I felt really good going into the week. I worked really hard on my few off weeks that I had. And I just kind of spoke it into existence.
Have you been able to manifest any other victories, or was this the first time you've tried this out?
You know, I think I did this one other time, my first AJJ Invitational win. So maybe this should become a thing. I just got to predict all of them.
I mean, I like it. There's proof in the pudding with the results that you've had so far. Now that you've had the win, like I mentioned, you're top 40 in the race to the CME Globe. How fast are things now going to shift for you with where you're at going forward with the rest of the season?
Yeah, I think my goals are definitely to keep this momentum going. But I felt like I was playing pretty solid the last bunch of weeks, and I'm glad it was finally able to come together. Getting my first professional win was my biggest goal this year. So I guess just kind of trying to feed off of that and keep a good year going.
Alexa, there aren't many seven-year-olds who are profiled in documentaries like you were. You were famous before you were famous. How have you coped and dealt with the fame and kind of the ups and downs of being in a documentary when you're a child?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, it gave me a lot of experience. I was definitely a lot more shy before I did the documentary, but I think it's awesome. It's inspired a lot of girls to start playing golf, or a lot of kids in general. And that's my favorite part about it, is getting to meet all of them. Even this week at the tournament, so many people have come up to me saying they watched the short game and started playing golf. And that's the whole reason that I agreed to do the documentary. So it's super exciting to see that that's still happening even now, years later.
You started playing the game competitively at such a young age. How have you kept that passion to compete over time, where it's still burning, to help you get that first win on the LPGA Tour?
I mean, I've been dreaming of a win on the LPGA Tour since, like you said, I started playing golf. But you're always just trying to get better in this game. There's always improvements you can make, so never satisfied, and just always trying to have fun with it and get better every day that I tee it up.
I think about all the road trips you must have taken with your dad, you know, motels, cross-country trips. He's caddied for you thousands of times. What was that first hug and conversation like when you got that victory?
Yeah, last week was just so special with him on the bag. I've been telling everyone it was probably my favorite week having my dad caddy, like going through Lynx Golf and the challenges in Ireland, losing my luggage. It was just... honestly, it was such a fun week on the course, and Lynx Golf was something I hadn't experienced before, so battling that with him was fun, and I'm just so glad that I got a victory with my dad on the bag, because like you said, we've been through so much together.
How helpful is it having him next to you as you've been starting your professional journey?
Yeah, last week it was especially helpful. I think in the playoff, he just kept me very loose and calm, and he knows my game just so well. So especially in tough conditions, like in the wind last week, he was able to be really helpful with judging shots and yardages. And that's something that you really need over there when the wind's blowing absurd amounts. So, like I said, last week was definitely my favorite week with him on the bag.
Alexa, as you probably know, Sunday Night Football is a relatively large property here at NBC. Yeah. You're rocking the Patriots logo, as you have for most of your life. Your thoughts on the Patriots at this point in the preseason? You look forward to the fall.
Yeah, I'm excited. We've got some good pickups, tons of amazing new rookies. I was able to go and watch a preseason game right before we came to Ireland, actually, and that was super fun. And I've always loved this team, but it makes me love them even more seeing how much they've supported me throughout my professional career. And I'm just so lucky to be attached to such an amazing organization.
Alexa, I was talking to Keegan Bradley last week, diehard Pats fan. He was saying he got to check out a practice with Coach Belichick. That was one of his highlights as far as other sports that he's been able to see. Have you ever had any overlap with Keegan, a fellow diehard Pats fan?
You know, I haven't, but I'd really love to. I think all people from Boston kind of have a connection when it comes to sports up there, because it's just so big. Like, being from Boston, you have to root for every New England team. And yeah, that'd be awesome to meet up with him. I think I saw he went to one of the practices, and so I was supposed to go to one, but it got rained out, so I got to go to a game. But yeah. Well, it'd be great to meet him.
I like what she says. You don't choose to be a fan of New England teams.
Oh, no,
you have to be.
It's in the DNA. Keegan, a winner this season. Now yeah. Alexa Pano, a winner this season. Congrats and best of luck in Canada.
Thank you so much.
All right. How about the story, the story arc of a young person that many of us watched in a documentary a decade ago, to her first LPGA Tour win?
Well, and you see all the different benchmarks, and we saw how talented she was as a seven-year-old. You never know, okay, is that going to translate to a teenager?
Yeah.
Then she's the youngest to make the Augusta National Women's Amateur. And we go, okay, well, what's the next step going to be? Is it going to be college golf or to go the professional route? She clearly had the talent to turn pro, but then you wonder, how long is it going to take her to find her footing? Her second start this season on the LPGA Tour, already a winner.
Yeah.
So then you start projecting, okay, well, if she already has a win, and we saw Rose Zhang, who's older than Alexa, but we were celebrating, wow, she got a win in her first start on the LPGA Tour. Well, what's Alexa now going to be capable of as a teenager already winning on the LPGA Tour? That's the big question going forward.
Alexa Pano gets it done. Maybe Amari Avery will be next up in the women's game. Congratulations to Alexa, folks. When Golf Today returns, we're checking back in with Paige McKenzie, speaking of the LPGA, former player who's taking a closer look at the contenders at Eastlake. This week, we go by the numbers on the other side of the break.
Back on Golf Today, a reminder, you can catch live first-round coverage of the season-ending Tour Championship tomorrow. That's Thursday, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Golf Channel. Let's take a look at the starting strokes, starting the week, minus 10. Once again, Scotty Scheffler. You may recall last year, he birdied 4 of 6-hole play when he completed the 54 holes on that Sunday morning and then lost that 6-shot lead to Rory McIlroy in the final round, looking for something better in 2023. Time now for By the Numbers, and say hello once again to Paige McKenzie. Paige, as we look back at last a few years in the Tour Championship where the eventual winner started the week, what stood out to you?
To me, it's either Rory or the guy at the top of the leaderboard on Thursday morning when they peg it. It's been an interesting mix in the last 4 years as we've come to this Tour Championship with the staggered start. Going back 4 years ago when we saw Rory McIlroy win for the first time, he came from 5 behind in 2019 to ultimately win. Dustin Johnson, Patrick Cantlay were the leader in the clubhouse on Thursday morning. And then Rory McIlroy again last season, he was actually 6 behind when he won. And so in looking at this, you're wondering, okay, what does that mean for the players at the top of the leaderboard to start the week this time around? And I looked at their scoring average of their history at Eastlake to get an idea of how you can handicap this race that's already got a staggered start. And obviously Xander Schauffele, 7 behind to start the week, has a distinct advantage in his past performance here, averaging under 67.5 shots. But when you look at the other three names, I found this to be very interesting. Rory McIlroy, Scottie Scheffler, Victor Hovland are the three next best scoring average on this golf course. They also happen to be, of course, the top three in scoring coming into the week. So given that, I expect that we're going to have a great shootout, but I also am keeping an eye, of course, on Scottie Scheffler and what he potentially could do. Of course, you can't overlook any of the guys in the top because we have seen winners come from as far as 6 back in Rory McIlroy.
Paige, we've all been around this game a good number of years. It's rare that something sneaks up on us, but are there any potential surprises this week when you look a little further down the leaderboard?
Well, I'm keeping an eye on a couple players that could make a run. If you've got a fantasy team or if you've got some money on the game this weekend, then I would keep an eye on Sungjae Im. He was one of the players on that list of players with good performance. He's got a scoring average of 68.625 on this golf course. He's also coming into this week in great form. In fact, he doesn't live that far away from this golf course, coming in with a couple top 10 finishes in this past two playoff events. And so I'm keeping an eye on Sungjae. He also has the last 12 consecutive rounds under 70 coming into this week. But also keeping an eye on Russell Henley, another player that's trending in the right direction, has 3 consecutive top 10s in his last 3 starts. And he is not on that list of past performances because that only is inclusive of the last 5 years of that scoring average at Eastlake. He has not competed in this event since 6 years ago. But what did he do 6 years ago? A tied for third. So Russell Henley, another player that has history here and is coming into this week with good form.
One thing I guarantee you at the Tour Championship, you're going to hear a lot of people yelling, "Go Dawgs."
Yeah, it's true.
One of those recipients there at Eastlake. Thanks, Paige. When Golf Today continues, it was a life-changing weekend in the amateur game. Nick Dunlap won the U.S. Amateur, and what a week it was. When we return, he's going to join us to recap how he turned a rocky start into a thrilling victory.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
And we're back on Golf Today. Over the weekend, Cherry Hills in Colorado, Nick Dunlap, a 19-year-old at the University of Alabama, made history when he defeated Ohio State senior Neil Shipley 4-3 in the 36-hole final of the U.S. Amateur Championship, becomes just the second player ever to win both the U.S. Junior and the U.S. Amateur, joining one Tiger Woods. And this is what he receives, a gold medal, custody of the Havermeyer Trophy for 1 year, exemption into the 2024 U.S. Open at Pinehurst, exemption into Royal Troon, the Open, likely invitation into the Masters, exemption from qualifying for the next 10 U.S. Amateurs. And Nick joins us now. 5 over through 7, how did you turn it around?
First of all, I appreciate you guys having me, but It's just one of those wild starts. You know, I've been playing pretty solid all summer, and to kind of start a golf tournament off like that, you know, you hit a wrong ball, and you know, I'm one of the first pairings off, hit a wrong ball, four putt, make a sloppy bogey on the seventh hole, and before you know it, it's not like you have four rounds to catch back up in this USAM. You know, you have two rounds, and you know, 320 of the best amateurs in the world. You got to be in the top 64. And kudos to Jeff, you know, for keeping me in there. Didn't have much time to turn it around. And, you know, that little note he wrote me on the eighth helped a ton. Was able to kind of settle down, birdie the eighth, birdie the ninth. And honestly, you know, just trying to give myself a chance come Tuesday evening on the back nine to have a chance to make match play.
At what point did you start to believe after that slow start, not only that you could make match play, but, hey, I can go on a run and win this thing?
I just knew if I could just settle down a little bit, you know, when you have one of those starts, all you see is red, you know, your head's spinning, you know, you start to lose a little bit of belief. And you know, when you're 5 or 3, 7, I didn't look, but pretty close to last, I would imagine. And, you know, got it back. I birdied 8, 9. I think I birdied 2 more or 3 holes in a row on the back to get it back to even par. And, you know, from there, it's like, okay, well, all I have to do is make, you know, 1 or 2 more birdies and we're in match play. And, you know, for that, you know, the top 64, you don't have to finish first. You just have to, you know, figure out a way to get inside that top 64 and, you know, move on to match play. You never know what can happen from there.
Well, Nick, you knew going into the USAM that there was only one other guy to win the US Junior and the USAM. His name is Tiger Woods, I believe. How did you handle that weighted history?
It's hard. You know, I've talked a lot with Brett McCabe. He's, you know, a sports psychologist out of Birmingham. He's helped me a ton over the years, and especially last week. But, you know, I think in the past, I've tried to just, you know, push all those thoughts away and act like they weren't there. And, you know, this week, you know, we talked about just embracing that, embracing the pressure, embracing what the United States Amateurs stood for, you know, the exemptions that came with it. And, you know, obviously it's the PGA Tour Accelerated and the PGA U talk. And you just embrace it all, embrace the crowd, embrace, you know, Cherry Hills and all the history there. And, you know, enjoy the week and, you know, add them all up at the end.
Jeff Kroll obviously was on the back. He knows you really well from when you were a little kid, first starting to play the game, and he's had some bold predictions going forward. And I know you're familiar with what he said, that by 25, you're going to be number one in the world. When you hear that, what do you think?
Man, me and Jeff go way back. You know, for whatever reason, he predicted that I was going to do something like this when I was about 12 years old. I don't know exactly what he saw in me. I've had kind of the same work ethic when I was about 12 and 13. And, you know, I think there's pictures of me hitting balls and, you know, in the rain and at night and stuff like that. But Jeff's been there every step of the way. He's been a huge help for me. You know, growing up, I was fortunate enough to play at a pretty cool group at Greystone and, you know, with a lot of pros, including, you know, Sepp Straka and Lee Hodges and Michael Johnson. And, you know, the group goes on. And to grow up learning from them and, you know, kind of having Jeff take me under his wing and really shown me, you know, all I know about golf. It's helped me. And, you know, I just kind of take the mindset of if I can beat these guys, you know, especially Sepp and Lee, who's, you know, playing really well, winning on tour, competing in majors, that it's just given me that much more confidence, you know, competing in the tournaments that I'm playing in now.
Nick, you're saying Jeff saw something when you were 12. I have an idea, Damon, looking at his Alabama bio.
Yeah.
He shot 59 at Highland Golf Club in Birmingham, June of 2016. That was going into seventh grade. So I had sneaking suspicion when you're breaking 60 at that age, maybe he saw some potential in you.
No, absolutely. And like I said, it's been a cool ride. You know, I grew up playing a lot of sports, and golf kind of became, you know, secondary or almost third. And I moved to Greenville, South Carolina, and that's kind of when golf became a main priority for me. And, you know, moved away from Jeff. And, you know, I think honestly moving away from, you know, from a city like Birmingham and from all my friends, you kind of find out, you know, who your closest people are. And, you know, Jeff never left my side. He was there for me, you know, through the ups and downs. And, you know, just to go through some of my accomplishments and some of my dreams with him right next to me has been, you know, something really special and, you know, something that neither of us are ever going to forget.
Nick, what's the coolest thing that's happened to you since you won?
I've got some pretty cool text messages. Coach Saban called me right after I won. I was in the USGA little headquarters room, and you know, to get that phone call from him was pretty cool. Gotten fairly close with him over the past couple months here at Bama. He's, you know, he's kind of a golfaholic, you could say. He plays and practices a ton. Coach Mike Shanahan called me. Actually, we had our little celebratory dinner at his restaurant in Denver, and I got a couple texts from JT, and it's been so surreal. I don't think it's quite set in yet. And, you know, I've talked to a couple buddies that just the fact that I have, you know, St. Andrews here and next week and Augusta and Royal Troon on the same schedule as a 19-year-old kid is absolutely unbelievable.
That's what dreams are made of. I mean, now that you have a direct line to Coach Saban, any chance for any, you know, Alabama night games this fall we may see you on the sidelines there?
I think I'll be on the field on the Texas game here shortly, which will be pretty cool in between the first and second quarter. But I think it's actually our first time hosting Texas, and that game's going to be pretty rowdy. It'll be my first home game this year. I'm going to miss I think we're playing Middle Tennessee at home week one. I'll be in Scotland, but no, I'm looking forward to it. I've been looking forward to it ever since it ended last year. There's nothing like SEC football, and, you know, Brian Denny at 7 o'clock against some big-time schools and some SEC schools, there's nothing like it.
Just hits different, doesn't it, Dan?
Alabama's a football school, but it's a golf school.
It really is.
As well, clearly. Hey, Nick, congratulations. Well done. Thanks for the time.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you guys having me.
Some more news in the amateur ranks. Earlier today, the RNA and USGA announced the Gordon Sargent as the winner of the 2023 Mark H. McCormick Medal as the world's leading male amateur golfer. Been an excellent run for the Vanderbilt standout. Remember, he won the 2022 NCAA Men's Individual Championship. Sargent competed at the Masters, earned low amateur honors at the U.S. Open. He's on the United States Walker Cup team that will take on Great Britain and Ireland on the old course at St. Andrews next week. With the award, Sargent will earn an invitation to the 2024 U.S. Open at Pinehurst and the Open at Royal Troon. Not too shabby.
Not shabby at all. Another past U.S. Am champ, Victor Hovland, put together one of the most impressive nine-hole stretches you'll ever see. On Sunday, his victory at the BMW put him in prime position to potentially win the FedEx Cup. What has Victor been doing so well? We'll take a closer look at the numbers next.
Winding down hour number one of golf today. This week, the PGA Tour season concludes with the Tour Championship. The top 30 in the FedEx Cup standings. They're going to throw down at East Lake Golf Club. First round coverage starts tomorrow. That's 1 Eastern right here on Golf Channel.
Victor Hovland coming in hot, wouldn't you say? He was with the media today in Atlanta talking strategy.
You're starting this week with a significant advantage compared to your past three tour starts. Does that change at all, like your strategy going in or how aggressive you plan on being?
Not really. I think in the back of your mind it helps. I'm still trying to do the same thing on the golf course, but I think in the back of your mind, not starting 10 shots behind makes it a little bit easier. You don't feel like you have to get off to a fast start. You can just kind of play your game, and if you make 6, 7, 8 pars in a row, you're not stressing out. You're not thinking, man, I'm 13 shots back now. You know, you're still right in the thick of it, so I think that kind of relaxes you a little bit, but that's still doesn't mean you can let up, because if you let up, these other guys are going to, they're going to make birdies and get even further ahead. So mentally, try to just do the same process, and hopefully the putts keep rolling in and keep hitting good iron shots.
You obviously work with Eduardo Molinari a bit with your stats. I'm just wondering if there's been anything surprising that he's kind of uncovered in your game since you started working with him that, you know, has helped you.
Yeah, I touched on this a little bit earlier this year. I think it was right after Augusta. It was right after Augusta National. I had obviously been working with Eduardo for about a year, or even more than that, a year and a half. And Joe Mayo, my instructor, got on board earlier this year. And just from watching me play the first kind of 3, 4, 5 months of the season, he was like, look in, man, things are looking really good, but I would have a double bogey here or a double bogey there, and it would just kind of mess up the whole tournament for me, or it would get me out of contention. And he even said this while we're playing the Masters, while I'm in contention. It's like there's something that's missing. There's something that's not right. And in terms of in poker terms, we like to play a lot of poker. It's like my frequencies are a little bit off. You know, there's a certain percentage of the time you're supposed to bet, you're supposed to check raise, or you're supposed to bluff. And basically, there's a certain percentage you're supposed to short side yourself. But basically, I was doing that way more than the average player. And that's when Joe asked Eduardo to see if the stats back that up. And we got a pretty good idea of just that. That's basically what the stats showed. I was short-siding myself way more than the average sure player does. So that was very revealing.
And time now to head over to the CDW Intelligence Center and go beyond the scorecard using ShotLink statistics. George, Golf World still buzzing about Victor Hovland's final round outside Chicago.
Yeah, his record-setting performance that he was able to slap together on the North course, that final 9-28, just absolutely electric. Here are the strokes gain numbers that he put together those final 18 holes. Gained 3 shots just with the putter. You see tee to green was first in the field, 4.69, just a complete dismantling of Olympia Fields to come from behind and ultimately win by 2, Damon.
I love that we're looking inside the numbers with this player specifically, because he's talked about some weaknesses that he's had in his game pertaining to the short game. He's improved his short game, but not just his short game. Let's take a look at his strokes gain numbers across the board. Improvement from 2022 to this year. Look at the total number, first of all, 34 to 9 around the green, which has been a trouble spot for Victor, from 191 to 105. Tee to green, 60 to 7. Off the tee, 26 to 8. Approach about the same, 15 to 14. Putting, the only number that has, you know, had a little bit of a backsliding situation. But for an already elite ball striker, his numbers continue to get even better.
Yeah, you look around the green, 191. I mean, you're not just the worst among regulars on the PGA Tour. You're almost one of the worst guys who tees it up at all on the PGA Tour. So to go from 191 to 105, then 105, you're just below average. You're kind of like the bottom 30, bottom 40%. But if you're as elite a ball striker as Victor Hovland is, we see what he does with the driver off the tee. We see what he does with his iron game. You just have to be average around the green. And the putter last year, he was top 25. So we know he's a very capable putter. He's top third with the putter on the PGA Tour. So as he continues to progress with his short game around the greens, he's just kind of scratching the surface with how great he can be, having his first multi-win season on the PGA Tour.
Love to see great players continuing to find ways to get even better. That was the CDW Intelligence Center.
Speaking of greatness, still to come, Jon Rahm chasing his first FedEx Cup title this week in Atlanta. Already has 4 PGA Tour wins this season. He's going to sit down with our very own Todd Lewis for an interview. Stay tuned.
Golf Today.
PGA Tour in Atlanta, Georgia this week for the season-ending Tour Championship. Top 30 in the FedEx Cup standings will compete at East Lake Golf Club. The first round coverage coming your way tomorrow, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. It's the second hour of Golf Today. Damon Hack alongside George Savarica has been watching the FedEx Cup since 2007. Do you like what you see? A bow on the end of a season.
I like that it's the format they now have, 3 weeks. It was an actual playoffs to get in with just 70.
Felt that way, didn't it?
You could see guys like Justin Thomas chasing it to not only get in the playoffs, but of course he has his eyes on having a tee time in Rome. But players were then in the field for events that were atypical to how they normally operated, with some of those guys who were in that 71, 72, 73 odd man looking in. I also, like I said, in hour one, I think the format's a little easier now to follow for the fan as far as having it just be whoever wins in Atlanta wins the FedEx Cup. I think it would be neat to see maybe a week one, a bye week, and then the last two. That way you
get real playoffy, aren't you?
Exactly. Well, that way you have guys, or maybe a bye week leading into the Tour Championship to have some build up. Then you'd have guys play more towards the end of the regular season and not get as burned out, knowing, okay, if I'm top 30, I'm going to have 3 straight weeks.
Right.
And I don't necessarily want to then play Wyndham, because playing 4 in a row is a lot to ask from these guys. And especially, I mean, just even look at the forecast this week.
Yeah, Atlanta, it's going to be a little toasty. I like it, though. I like the cutoff. I thought 125.
I thought, you know, making, you know, saving your card and keeping for the next year, but also making the playoffs didn't feel enough like the playoffs. You know, good teams make the playoffs. The great teams, you know, are going to be higher up. I think that's the way it should be. This felt that way, that you could have a decent season but not make the playoffs. That's how sports has been for time immemorial.
Every other sport, it's about 40%.
Yeah.
Playoffs, maybe 50% tops.
Yeah, everybody can't get in.
Where you had 12 to 16 teams out of a 30 to 32 team league. So this, now the split, it being 70, I think that's a very fair number that I would like to see them reprise going forward.
Seeing Justin Thomas roll around on his back in Greensboro, that's what it was all about.
Yeah, there's some genuine anguish as they're trying to play their way into the postseason.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, taking a look at the first leg of the FedEx Cup playoffs, and what a story it was. Lucas Glover, a winner at the Wyndham Championship, carries that mojo right in to the FedEx Cup playoffs, taking the FedEx St. Jude Championship to have a multi-win season. What a career renaissance it's been for Lucas Glover. Then Victor Hovland, second leg at the BMW Championship, a masterful Sunday with that 61, including that 7-under-28 on the back nine to also net a multi-win season for Victor Hovland.
Yeah, let's take a look at the FedEx Cup starting strokes leaderboard. John Rahm, you see, is fourth on the list and four back of Scottie Scheffler. So starting the week in chase mode, and this year's Masters champ sat down with our own Todd Lewis.
John, let's talk strategy. When you're chasing a lead on Sunday and you're four back, or maybe even the weekend and you're four back, you're used to that. What's the attitude you bring when you start a tournament four back and you're chasing?
I don't know. You don't really, I don't think you think about it differently, right? It means it technically is a good thing because you have more time to make up those four shots. It can happen in the first five holes. It can happen in the on 18 or, you know, you can actually go the other way. So it's in my mind, it's a positive, though. You got more time to make up, right? The pressure is on whoever's leading. And all of the rest, the 29 of us, can need to make birdies to catch up. And it's funny because we've seen it all, right? We've seen people in the lead win it. We've seen people come way from behind and win it. It's happened. It happened last year. Rory was, what, 10, 11 shots back after two holes last year and ended up winning. So anything can happen.
What do you have to do well here at this championship layout?
Everything. It's a golf course that doesn't allow you to have any part of your game to be off to really have a chance to succeed, right? Obviously, with this format, we have an advantage over some people, but you have to put it in the fairway because this Bermuda rough is very difficult to control. Those greens tend to be a little firmer than most. And if you're missing those greens, they're quite slow, quite elaborate. Again, Bermuda rough, it can be a little bit tougher, right? So you have to put in the ball in the fairway. If you put in the ball in the fairway, you have a short enough club for the most part to where you can be aggressive and try to attack for birdies, right? The times that I feel I've been really successful here is the times where I give myself, giving myself great chances. And those greens are so pure that I think eventually you're going to make a couple putts, right? And just kind of hopefully ride that momentum.
How would you describe your game right now coming to this championship?
Well, scores haven't been the best, but it's one of those things that as a player, it feels better than the scores are showing. So I'm confident that this week it can be the week where everything kind of shows.
Is that frustrating for you, knowing that you're playing better than the scores indicate?
Yeah, I think it's frustrating for anybody.
Right.
Well, you feel like you're doing things and you're working towards a goal and you're doing well, and it feels better than you know you should be, right? Yeah, I think it would be frustrating to anybody to not get the outcome that you expect, but that's golf. I mean, it happens, right? I think I really enjoyed a part of the year and the end of last year where maybe I was getting a lot out of how I was playing, right? So it's all a balance. It's never forever. So I'm just going to keep doing what I know I can do well and have faith because, you know, this takes a turn in no time, right? Mm-hmm. This sport, everything goes from 0 to 100 very quickly in both ways. So it's one more week, and I have full confidence I can get it done. Mm-hmm.
Final thing, let's talk about this year. Let's talk about this season. Win multiple times. You get top tens in three of the four majors, of course, highlighted by your win at Augusta National. As you reflect back on this season, it looks, from our perspective, like it was successful. What's your perspective?
It's very successful. Listen, every year I come here and I get this question, and I always have the feel of, I wish I would have done more. You know, I come here with...
And like you said, that's golf, right?
With 10, 15, top 10s and one win. And this year I can say, even though I've had a couple months where I haven't played my best, this is an incredible year, right?
Yeah.
I achieved almost all the goals I had in mind very early on the year. By April, I checked a lot of things on my list. So that's nothing but successful, right? If anything, it's a learning process when you accomplish so much so fast. And it's a beautiful thing to be able to learn from myself, even at my best, right? So this year can only be described as a very, very successful year.
Yeah, it's a joy to watch you play. Wish you the best this week. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate you.
John Rahm, clear-eyed. Every week important to the big Spaniard, from Mexico to the Masters to East Lake. He is always locked in and ready. You see his tee time tomorrow alongside Rory McIlroy, 1:49 p.m. Eastern time. Speaking of time now for the Road to Solheim Cup presented by Ping. Flashback to 2019, the Solheim Cup at Glen Eagles in Scotland. Suzanne Pedersen made this clutch putt on the 18th hole for Europe to defeat Marina Alex and secure the clinching point. She would announce her retirement following the competition, the ultimate walk-off.
What a way to sign off to your Solheim Cup career.
Incredible.
Then in 2021, Solheim Cup at Inverness in Toledo, Ohio. Team Europe retaining the Solheim Cup, a 15-13 win on the road over Team USA. It was Europe's second victory on U.S. soil, since with the first one coming 10 years ago back in 2013. So here is the team. They had 8 automatic qualifiers. You saw the Solheim Cup selection show yesterday for the 4 captains' picks right here on Golf Channel. The 4 picks: Madeline Sagstrom, Gemma Dryberg, Emily Christine Peterson, and Caroline Hedwall, 3 of the 4 with Solheim Cup experience and 1 rookie added to the bunch. So Emily Peterson now on the show. And Emily, you get the news yesterday. Had to be a happy phone call. Did you have an inkling that you were going to be one of the captain's picks for Suzanne Pedersen?
Obviously, it was a great phone call, but I had been in touch with Suzanne pretty much all year. And I was hopeful that if I just played decent in the Europe stretch that I was going to get a pick. But, I mean, you never know. And I feel like so many European players have played great this year. So I was never 100% sure.
Why don't you pat yourself on the back a little bit? Why do you think you were chosen? Why does Suzanne want you on this team?
I think experience, and then I think I have a game that is quite easy to pair people with. I usually hit a lot of fairways, a lot of greens, make a lot of birdies, and then I think I bring a lot of good vibes to the team room as well.
You had a better record in the 2021 Solheim Cup versus 2017. How much more comfortable did you feel the second time being in the Solheim Cup?
I feel a lot more comfortable the second time. I kind of missed one in 2019, so I had 4 years to kind of grow and learn from the experience from 2017. And I think the more you play, the more comfortable you are in the situation.
Speaking of the different years, 2017, you lose to Danielle Kang in singles, and then you get matched up with Danielle again in 2021, and you beat her at really the height of her power. What do you recall about that singles match? Came right down to the end.
I know it was super tight, and Danielle's obviously a great player, and she's feisty, and she's a tough competitor in match play. And it was the anchor match. It kind of took the pressure off a little bit when Matilda held the pot, and therefore I know I could have the match. But I was kind of up the whole way, and then towards the end, I think I was 3 up with 3 to play, but then Danielle won 16-17, and I was like, I remember everyone coming over and be like, okay, come on, just win the last hole or half the last hole so we can win the cup.
Is it pretty amazing to you how strong the Scandinavian contingent is on the Solheim Cup team? You have a captain from Norway, and then you have 5 Swedes on the team. You have Denmark, Sweden, and Norway all represented here.
It's great. I think it's obviously the effect that Annika and Suzanne has had over the years. We've had great role models to look up to, and it's obviously inspired a lot of generations, and I think it will continue to. And I think it's just great to see such a young team and such a Scandinavian team.
Speaking of Denmark, now, golf and tennis are cousins in some way. Are you watching Holger Rune
My kids play tennis. I'm a big tennis fan. I'm like a country club player, B-flight for the most part. What are your thoughts on Holger Rune's rise in the sport of tennis?
I think he's amazing. Obviously, he's super young. I think he has the feistiness that a lot of Danes and Scandinavian people does. And I think it's fun to watch him play. He has a lot of talent, obviously, and it looks like he really enjoys the game. He makes some crazy shots, and it's a great journey to follow.
Suzanne Patterson was telling us yesterday that it's the best European Solheim Cup team that she's seen on paper. You've been part of a winning team just a couple of years ago in 2021. How does this year's team stack up?
I do think it is the best year, the best team on paper, and I'm hopefully we can do well. I know the Americans are always strong. We have Lilia Vu on the team. That's world number one. That's won two majors. I mean, Nelly always shows up, and everyone is there. But I definitely believe we have a great team, and I do believe that if we go out and play the quality golf that a lot of the Europeans have played this year, we have a great chance of winning once again.
Emily, there's certain coaches and captains that you'd run through a wall for. You just want to play for them. You love playing for them. What do you think it's going to be like to have Suzanne Patterson, you know, holding that walkie-talkie and leading you guys into this competition?
I think she's going to do a great job. I mean, she's going to do some great speeches. She's going to pump everyone up for it. I think she's probably at some stage is going to want to play on her own, but she kind of has to let the rest of us play. But obviously she's been involved last year, and she was involved as well in the 2017 as a captain. So she kind of knows the role of being on the line of support. So I think she'll do a great job.
You had that massive 2020 season on the Ladies European Tour with four wins, your last one coming in Andalusia to cap it off in that November. That's where the Solheim Cup is. How familiar are you with the venue and then the memories you have of that region?
I love Spain. I used to always go there when I was young as an amateur to practice a couple times a year. And we went after the last LET event of the 2022 season. Suzanne invited a bunch of the girls to play Finca, and we had a good day there and kind of had a look at the venue, and she talked about what did we think of this hole and this is how number one's going to be and so on. So I know it a little bit, but I'm sure it will look very, very different when I come back in a few weeks.
Only a few weeks away, Emily. We're all very excited for the Solheim Cup. Best of luck, and thanks for the time today.
No worries. Thank you.
Well, if you're a fan of Team Europe, then you're going to love this graphic. The recent results in the Solheim Cup, they have won 4 of 6. You take a look, this just shows the last 5 winners in 2013, 2019, and 2021. They're trying to make it 3 in a row, or can Team USA flip the script and win on road soil? We're going to see that next month in Spain.
Is that why the music is so sad?
Yeah, very
the
somber.
American golf fan? Wow, gee whiz. My goodness, turn it around, American team. All right, when Golf Today returns, we're headed back out to Atlanta as the executive director of the Tour Championship, Alex Urban, joins the show as changes are on the horizon for this week's venue. Stay tuned. Back on Golf Today, first year of the FedEx Cup playoffs, where 2007 East Lake Golf Club Tiger Woods claimed his first FedEx Cup, shooting the lowest 72-hole score of his career at East Lake and winning the Tour Championship by 8.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye indeed. And then last year, Rory made history when he passed Scottie Scheffler in the final round of the Tour Championship and in the process became the first player ever to win 3 FedEx Cup titles passing Tiger.
Yeah, that's pretty special. Get to look at East Lake Golf Club, first established in 1904, 110 years ago. Architect Donald Ross redesigned the present layout, home course of Bobby Jones, of course. Site of the 1950 U.S. Women's Amateur, 63 Ryder Cup, 2001 U.S. Amateur, and East Lake Cup, that dating back to 2015. Became permanent host of the Tour Championship in 2004. So with that in mind, PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan asked about the future of the Tour Championship.
As you look to 3 to 5 years, as you said, you know, this tournament is very well positioned. And I think with the work that's going to be done to the golf course starting next week, I think that should give you every indication, alongside the fact that the partners I mentioned earlier are long-term committed to the Tour Championship at East Lake. I expect to be sitting up here in front of you for many years to come. This week.
Pleased to be joined now by Alex Urban, the executive director for the Tour Championship. Alex, steamy week in Atlanta, always a good one with the Tour Championship. How are you doing?
Hey, we're doing all right. We're doing all right. Thanks for having me.
Of course. What are you looking forward to this week as we have the top 30 in the FedEx Cup playing for golf's biggest prize on the PGA Tour?
Yeah, no, you framed it up quite nicely. It's this is the culminating event of the FedEx Cup playoffs. It's Eastlake. It's the Tour Championship. What more do you want than that? It's an exciting time. We're going to start on Thursday with a heck of a leaderboard, and I think it should be very exciting.
Alex, you moved to the community in 2018. What's it been like to see the growth with the Eastlake Foundation and what this tournament means to the people of Atlanta?
Yeah, you know, this is my second event here, so I moved here last year, but I've supported this event through the years in previous roles with the tour, and it's been amazing to watch the transformation of Eastlake since Tom Cousins bought Eastlake Golf Club and the Eastlake Foundation, purpose-built communities, all these organizations working together to create a better community through education and affordable housing, all of those types of community needs. And it's amazing. You go through here, we were just talking about how unbelievable the area is, the neighborhood, the schools. The Drew Charter School just down the street is one of the best schools in the state, and it's just very, very cool to see.
It's been such a familiar spot to have Eastlake in Atlanta be the Tour Championship, like you mentioned, the kind of the culmination of the FedEx Cup playoffs. How do you see this tournament evolving going forward?
Yeah, you know, the evolution is there, and we're witnessing it. This is, you know, the FedEx Cup started 17 years ago, and we've got some nice history and tradition, and we flipped the nines, and I think the way that the PGA Tour schedule is shaping up, obviously a return to the calendar season, it all really serves to build up the FedEx Cup playoffs. It builds up, which ultimately builds up the Tour Championship, and what we're seeing is more interest locally here in Atlanta, but also more interest nationally, because it is such an inflection point in the golf calendar throughout the year. And so I think what we're continuing to see and hoping to see is just the growth of that. And, you know, this is the big prize to win on the PGA Tour. And that's really sinking in, especially for obviously the players, but for this market, for the golf world as a whole.
After the Tour Championship, the golf course is going to close for a full year. What do you hope to see on the other side of the renovation?
Yeah, we're really excited about it. You know, the Eastlake Golf Club is working with Andrew Green, who's done some unbelievable projects lately. And the hope and I think the desire is to return the golf course to some of the design features from its Donald Ross days. They found this old photograph from the 1949, this overhead photograph that had all these original design features in it. And I think the hope is to take that photograph and return the golf course to some of those original designs. You know, design features that would have been here when Bobby Jones and Alexa Sterling and some of those legendary golfers were learning the game and walking the fairways here.
Alex, you moved to the Atlanta market, like you said, just this past year. Prior to that, you were the tournament director for the Century Tournament of Champions in Kapalua. We heard PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan say yesterday, if the community can welcome them, he hopes to have that event return there in 2024. I know it's an area that's near and dear to your heart. Do you have the pulse of how the PGA Tour has been trying to aid in those recovery efforts after those devastating fires?
Yeah, it's obviously near and dear to my heart. I lived about 10 minutes from Lahaina, just north up near Kapalua. And, huge shout out to Max and Corinne and our two PGA Tour employees that are there, Karen Sagar, on the ground in Maui. They're all dealing the best that they can right now. And I think Jay said it very well. Obviously, our thoughts are with them and how we can help and how we can do anything we can to support those people out there. Obviously, the Maui community, super important to the PGA Tour. We've been there for a long time. I lived out there. Also important to our partner, Century. They do a ton of things for that community from a community and charitable standpoint. I imagine it'll be no different when a crisis like this comes down the way. So really excited about that for everyone to kind of work together for support and aid for Maui. They're just such great people there. It's a community where people help people, which is fantastic, but they're going to need some outside help as well. So hopefully that can be something the PGA Tour is part of But really just thinking about all of my people out there that are still dealing with the aftermath of those fires, which are just horrible.
Yeah, people of Maui, top of mind for so many of us in the golf industry as well. Alex, thanks for the time. Have a great week in Atlanta.
Hey, thanks for having us, and we're looking forward to a great tour championship.
And when Golf Today returns, world number one Scottie Scheffler is a year removed from finishing runner-up in the FedEx Cup playoffs. Next, he sits down with Todd Lewis for a chat you won't want to miss. Welcome back to Golf Today. It's been back-to-back impressive years for Scottie Scheffler. Back in February, came out on top at TPC Scottsdale, defending his title to WM Phoenix Open. Fired four straight rounds in the 60s, won by a couple shots over Nick Taylor.
And you remember 2022, wins the WM Phoenix Open for his first win. Rips off four wins, including the Masters. So a month later at the Players, when he boat raced the field to get his second PGA Tour win this season. Remember, his grandma was on hand for every hole that Scottie played. You thought, okay, this is going to be another monster season for Scottie Scheffler. It has been in some respects, but the win total has been stuck on two since the Players, but he's had 16 top 10 finishes in 22 starts, David.
Scotty, I followed you for the number of years. You seem to live in the moment. You don't like to live in the past. That being said, we know what happened here last year. You still in the moment?
I try to live in the moment as much as possible. I think that gets challenging with all the distractions that we have kind of in our world. So I do my best to try and stay in the moment. But, yeah, last year was obviously not the way that I wanted to finish off the year. I definitely envisioned it finishing a little bit differently, but that's part of the game. You're going to win some and lose some, and you know, that was a tough loss. But I would say part of that loss is what helped me, you know, finish off the Players like I did this year. And anytime you fail, I think you learn a lot about yourself. And it's the same thing when you succeed. I'm always just trying to learn and do my best.
All right, what did you learn
from last year here?
Yeah,
I learned a lot about how much I like to fight in those moments. Looking back at last year's final round, I lost my lead really, really early in the round. I think I may have already lost it by like hole six or seven. I kind of gave myself a good talking to on number eight, and then I felt like I played really, really good after that, and it was a lot of fun going down the stretch. Obviously, I wish I would have finished with a couple birdies instead of, I think I maybe bogeyed 16, but I mean, being in that moment is a lot of fun, and I'm excited to get back and hopefully be in a similar position this year.
We're at the end of the season. As you look back on this season, how would you define it?
I would say just very consistent. I think it's been one of my best years as a professional just based on the consistency. I think being a professional golfer, I always want to win every single tournament. Sure. And anytime you don't, you're always frustrated at the end. And so you kind of get used to living a life of frustration when it comes to golf. But I'm definitely the most proud of my consistency this year.
Yeah. How do you manage your internal expectations? Are they difficult to put together?
To manage the expectations?
Yeah.
I would say, yeah, I have very high expectations for myself, and that's part of coming out and just trying to play freely is having the confidence to have those really high expectations, but then when it comes to going out and playing, just going out and trying to do my best, and that's what I try to focus on, hitting good shots versus focusing on the results. I'm just focused on trying to control what I can control and go out and execute.
All right. Final thing, and I'm not trying to sit here and point out a flaw in your game because you're a great player, but your putting has been a little interesting this year. We'll call it that. You seem to be hitting the ball in the center of the club. Are you feeling that you are hitting where you want it to go?
On the greens?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, my putting's been talked about a lot this year. and it's been a long season in terms of that. I think that I've used a couple different putters this year, which when it comes to me changing equipment, I've never been great when I'm switching around stuff. And I actually, oddly enough, I had some time on Monday this week, and I went back and I watched a lot of stuff from the beginning of the year, and I saw a lot of really, really good strokes and a lot of putts that got really, really close to going in and didn't go in. And so looking back on the year, I felt like if I would have stayed a little bit more patient with the putter that I've used, I mean, it's a putter that I've won six times with. I've accomplished a lot in my career with a certain putter, and I had two rough weeks at putting at Colonial and Memorial. Memorial, where I didn't feel like I was putting very good. Colonial, where I felt like I was rolling it nice and the putts just weren't going in. And I kind of abandoned my putter, which Sometimes you got to put it to the side, put it in timeout a little bit. But as I reflect on the year, that's one thing that I've learned about myself is I'm not great when I'm trying to change. And if something's not going right, it's best to just stay the course and stay patient. And like last fall, I used a putter for 6 rounds that I loved at home, and I brought it on the course. I couldn't make anything with it. I used it at CJ Cup. I mean, I missed everything, and I felt like I was hitting good putts. And so the switching for me is not the best strategy, and that's something that I've definitely learned as a player is find something that I know and trust and then go for it.
I'm at that. When it comes to putting, that Scotty Scheffler has commitment issues. So you're committed to this one.
Yeah, I'm committed.
Hey, I wish you the best. Thanks for your time, Scotty. Thanks, as always,
Todd. Appreciate it.
You got it.
Thanks, buddy.
Scotty Scheffler talking about the triumphs and travails of being a high-level elite professional golfer. We welcome back Paige McKenzie. Lots unpacked there. This is one of the best players. This is the best player in the world, but the year's been talked a lot about the deficiencies in his putting.
Without question, I think because it's been a glaring decline and it's a glaring part of his game, but I'm not going to talk about his putting because it's been too good of a year. It's been a too consistent of a year to focus on the negative. And I think the negative was highlighted only because of such an incredible approach play performance. We saw some incredible iron play from Scotty Scheffler this year, and that's what I want to highlight. When you talk about Scotty Scheffler this year, you got to put it into context of what's happened over the past several years on the PGA Tour. When you look at where his strokes gained approach numbers are, he's by far better than some of these leaders that we've had the last several years. And we were drooling over the likes of Will Zalatoris and Colin Morikawa over the last couple of seasons. But what Scotty Scheffler has done is separate himself in a way that you can give it some historical context. Going back the last 10 years, only two players better than him in this number. And again, this is based on a baseline median of what the PGA Tour players typically do. So Scotty Scheffler is that much better on a daily basis with his iron play than some of the other players on the PGA Tour. That's how he's able to get away with maybe a bulky putter here and there throughout the season. But that's what I want to focus on because I think that's going to be important this week at Eastlake Cup. We've talked about the success that he's had here, the scoring average that he's had here in the three events that he's played in already. I think if he continues to lean on the strength, the rest could follow for him.
Well, you heard Paige break it down. You wonder what is going to happen first. Scotty Scheffler continues this amazing run of ball striking into next season and remains elite. Like we saw Hideki Matsuyama have that run where he was top three or top five in strokes gained approach for a sustained period of time. Will that continue or will the putter stay where it is for the next few years? Or is he going to reach equilibrium with the putter where if that putter is even average, then we're going to see another PGA Tour Player of the Year type season for Scotty Scheffler?
Ball striking numbers will come down. This is an historically good run of golf from Scotty Scheffler. I think that golf being golf, that at some point those numbers will come down.
So if that drops, you think,
and I think the putter will probably come back a little bit. I think he was very honest in that interview with Todd about, hey, maybe I should have stuck out the girl that I was with at the dance, kind of, you know.
It's so hard when you have a slump to not look at another putter and
he said, six wins with that putter. And he said,
maybe Tiger changed putters.
Yes, but very rarely. But he also knew, you know, what the gamer was. And I think that Scotty's still young in his career. We think about, you know, what he's accomplished. He feels like he's been around forever, but he's still young in his career. And I think, like Rory McIlroy, testing out some other putters this year, just trying to see, you know, find a little heat in that. But I think more likely than not, the elite, super historic ball striking numbers will probably come down at some point, and the law of averages would bring those putting numbers back up.
But he has only had one season where he was among the top 100 or top 99 in strokes gained putting. That was last year when he had 4 wins in a major. So that was almost more of an outlier last year than the fact that he's regressed so much to this being the worst putting season statistically of his career so far. What do you think, Paige?
Well, I think there's one more point I want to bring up. I thought it was good that Todd brought up, of course, last year at this event. It's hard to forget the battle of Scotty and Rory and the maybe failed Sunday for Scotty. It wasn't his best stuff. And when I looked at the final round scoring average of Scotty Scheffler from last season to this season, there's been an almost 2-shot difference in improvement, 1.8 shots better on final round Sunday, which I think is going to be important. When you talk about he was so close so many times this season, a lot of it was actually the charge on Sunday that brought him towards the top of the leaderboard. The bigger question is now, can he stay at the top of the leaderboard and then close on that Sunday? And given what the stats have shown, he's had tremendous Sundays this season.
It feels like he's just due to have that breakout week where the putter's a non-story for 72 holes. Yeah. And we see the Scottie Scheffler we saw a year ago.
This is a guy headed to the Hall of Fame. I have no
He's on that trajectory.
Question about it. I have no doubt.
100%.
No doubt. Back on golf today. Incredible night it was last night at East Lake. Our friend Gary Koch awarded the 2023 Payne Stewart Award. Award presented by Southern Company was awarded to Gary for Stewart's values of character, charity, and sportsmanship.
As a competitor, Payne was always easy to play with. The atmosphere in the group seemed to be relaxed, and he went about his business in a very calm and kind of controlled manner. And as Roger Maltby said earlier, oftentimes when I played with him, it seemed like the main goal was to just have fun, which when you're playing for a living, that's really hard to do. But Payne seemed to make it very easy. I always have a thought about one week in particular. That was the 1984 Bay Hill Classic. Payne and I played together in the first two rounds. And I found myself in contention, or in the fringe of contention, going into the final round. And I happened to run into Payne that Sunday morning. His words to me proved to be very prophetic. He said, "You know what? You're playing well. Go out and shoot a low score. You never know." And I did. I shot 63 in that final round. I got into a playoff and eventually won.
That was such a good watch last night. Speaking of good watch, how about the performance Brian Harman put together at the Open to win by not one, not two, not three, one by six, capture his first major and become the champion golfer of the year. Such an impressive performance. And you look at Brian Harman, what he's done in his career with his best FedEx Cup finishes on the PGA Tour. Last year made the Tour Championship, same in 2017. This year he enters the week eighth in the standings, so could cap off a career year. He's one of the six automatic qualifiers for the U.S. Ryder Cup team, headlined by Scottie Scheffler. Xander Schauffele grabbed that sixth and final automatic spot. We heard Rory McIlroy earlier was asked about the U.S. team being able to take LIV guys, Europe unable to. He said the LIV Europe guys wouldn't have an impact. Maybe a different story, though, for Team USA. Here's Brian Harman's thoughts about maybe Brooks Koepka being in the mix as a captain's pick.
Brian, obviously you're an automatic qualifier for the Ryder Cup. Just your thoughts on Brooks and whether or not you think LIV guys should be on the team if that matters.
I think if Brooks, he's right there. I think he would be a pretty good addition to the team. I'm not totally familiar with his record in Ryder Cups, but the experience would certainly help, especially considering there's probably gonna be a fair amount of rookies over there. In my opinion, the goal of the Ryder Cup is to win. So whoever Zach thinks that can help us win the Ryder Cup, I think needs to be on the team.
Do you feel like you can have some of your better golf ahead of you? And how do you do that at 36? Or what's the key to maybe having some of your better years at that age in a young man's game, as you called it?
I think I spent a little too much time as a younger man worrying about things I couldn't do. I feel a lot more secure in what I can do now and in trying to improve the things that I'm good at, trying to be elite at a few things, not just okay at a lot of things.
Wise words there. Brian Harman, just, focus on what you're good at and become the best possible at that skill set.
Bring that claret jug, it just kind of brings everything.
Makes you secure.
It does make you secure.